Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing down-to-earth conversations about the realities of our real-life experiences. I'm your host, Lisette McKenzie, author, life and mindset transformation coach, and self-concept connoisseur. And together with my girls, Alicia and Natira, we'll be discussing everything from situations to situationships and the challenges women face every day as we navigate this thing called life.
All right, y'all. So we will get started.
Yes.
So today, welcome and thank you everybody for joining in. Today, we're going to be having a candid discussion about depression, and joining us is Shaniqua Johnson, RN extraordinaire, who is going to share her words of wisdom. She is a phenomenal, phenomenal person. I'm gonna let her hop in and blow you away with all of her credentials.
Ooh, the expectations, my God, okay. To come correct. Well, thank you so very much for having me on. It is my great pleasure. So I am Shaniqua Johnson, RN. I like to say that because, as we were just joking before, like, doctors get to say Dr. Brown, Dr. this, Dr. that. So it's like, why not? Why not wear my credentials
the same way?
You so I always do Shaniqua Johnson, RN. Like, give me some sass on that. Give me some sass. Because I worked hard for that, you know? So, registered nurse for many, many years, close to 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I've worked in different areas of healthcare, taking care of, you know, specializations in diabetes. And unfortunately, depression has become one of my areas of specialty. So I'm also a life coach and a health coach. So I help to keep people encouraged and motivated to do what they're purposely called to do in life. Oftentimes we wander around aimlessly and we gravitate to all these titles. We're mom, we're daughter, we're, you know, wife. We've got all of these titles, but sometimes that leaves us feeling a little empty. Sometimes it leaves us feeling like we just don't even know what we're to do outside of those roles. So as a health coach and life coach, I help women primarily focus in on what it is that they were called to do. Because unfortunately, some people in their upper years still haven't figured out what their purpose in life is. And I think we could just be so much more effective when we learn exactly what it is that we were put here to do. That way we can get it done. So in addition to being a registered nurse and a health coach and a life coach, I am a best-selling author of several books.
Woo! She is.
Oh, honey, I did that. Yes.
Did that.
Yes. And I am the publishing executive at Stronger Through Faith Publishing, where I help people who have that gifting to write, who have a story to tell. I help them to birth their project. So I am helping women and men tell their story and become published authors as well. So I'm excited that that is actually one of my callings that I didn't know I had a calling in, but it's one of my callings. So I am happily working in that area.
Awesome.
So that's a little bit about me.
A little bit, and that's not even all of it, but you know,
she has a lot.
And you have to hear it a lot more from Miss Shaniqua, trust and believe. But I'm happy that you are here and willing to have this discussion, because depression is something that is very prevalent in men and women. I know I've experienced it, you've experienced it. So I wanted to talk about what depression is, what it looks like, how it manifests, in comparison to what people think depression is. Because a lot of people don't, when they think about depression, they think one thing, but in reality, depression is a lot more, and it'll go over your head. Mm-hmm. You really don't realize how significant some of the signs and symptoms of depression is. So let's talk about, Natira, have you had any experience with depression personally? Or
yes, personally and in my family. So I have a younger brother who's 5 years younger than me, who has been diagnosed as schizophrenic. I remember, I think there's a, I don't know if there, this is a medical term, but for to me, there's depression and then there's clinical depression. Mm-hmm. So you, depression, you could be depressed and, you know, you snap out of it and things get better for you. And then there may be a clinical depression where you just can't snap out of it or, you know, just motivate yourself. You may need some medication to balance out your hormones a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced both sides for me, just being depressed, just regular normal stresses of everyday life. And then I've experienced on the clinical side where it goes deeper than just having a bad day or stressful periods of time in your life.
Right.
So I've witnessed those two things. With my brother, he started off paranoid about something smelling on him. He would always ask, do I smell? Do I smell? And then he started hearing voices. And then he started, I mean, he just completely dropped his basket. Right. And then going through trying to get him medicated and how you have to really regulate the dose because there's no one size fits all situation for the clinically depressed. And then you have to monitor them to make sure that, number one, that they're taking their medication and that what they're taking really works for them. And then for me, it's just snapping out of those days where it's like, okay, enough. You know, you've had your pity party and it's time to get back on and keep pushing
right.
and motivating yourself. And I think part of the issue, especially with Black women, you're always seen so strong, strong Black woman. And so we don't talk enough about the issues that we face and the solutions to those issues that we could be taking advantage of. I think we can do a better job there.
Right. And just to go back really quickly with your brother, with him having schizophrenia and depression are two totally mm-hmm. different diagnoses. Mm-hmm. They can coexist. You can have depression and anxiety. You can have depression with any, depression goes with your coffee and your tea. So mm-hmm. he can have schizophrenia and also depression, but those are two separate diagnoses. And that's something that we can actually discuss on another episode. Yeah. I do know a couple of people who were diagnosed with schizophrenia, and it was scary.
Because he does go through his moments of depression.
Right.
I mean, I can see,
right.
okay, something is amiss here. But he is clinically diagnosed with something else as well. So
right, absolutely. Alicia, what about you?
I have experienced depression myself. It was, it'll be about 16 years ago, I was in high school, and pretty much what was happening is I was able to go to class and whatnot, but I had issues in high school personally with dealing with the other kids. I was bullied, and I had friends, but I just felt like I couldn't make my way, so I told my parents, and they ended up helping me get treatment. So I started seeing a therapist, and I also took medication, and that helped me get through high school. And since then, I haven't had to be medicated for depression, but it is something I pay close attention to, especially right. now having dealt with the loss of my dad. I know depression is definitely something that can happen during grief, but being able to go to my parents at a young age and kind of deal with my depression and tell them how I was feeling was very helpful. Both my parents were very accepting, and they wanted to get me help. They didn't want me to feel like I had to suffer alone.
Absolutely.
But it was definitely hard to say, you know, I don't feel right, and it's not something it's something I would like to help, but it wasn't something I could help. So definitely being able to speak with someone at that time definitely helped. And then as time's gone by, I do pay close attention to how I feel to really see, am I depressed or am I just in a mood? Because I do think while you can have depression for a prolonged period of time, there's also those times when you just kind of have a mood, and I feel like since high school, a lot of my down times have been mostly just having a mood, not necessarily depression. But that doesn't mean I feel like it's something I don't have to look out for. It's something I know I have to pay close attention to.
Right. And mm-hmm. So on that note, Shaniqua, let's talk about what depression really is and how it manifests differently to different people.
Right. You're absolutely right that it is. I like the way you put it. You said it goes with your coffee. It goes with your tea. Because a lot of times those comorbidities, as we like to know them as, or other diseases, other diagnoses, can have depression attached to it. Mm-hmm. So depression is a little bit more than a mood of sadness, like I'm sad. It goes a little bit further than that. And I like to say that depression is your coping abilities. That's me from my life coaching, my health coaching world that says there is something going on with your coping abilities, because we've all experienced sadness. Like you can be sad when you miss the train for work. You can be sad when you don't get a chance to be picked at your job for a promotion. Like you can be sad for those instances, but it really boils down to how are you coping with it? What are you doing with that sadness? Because that sadness can go on to become something that's going to last longer than, oh, what I'm feeling right here, right now in this present moment. So it is important that we understand that depression can look differently in other people. Like, it doesn't have to look the same the way it looks in me. It doesn't have to look the same in Natira, or in her brother. Like, it doesn't have to look the same in all of us. So we can't categorize depression because, oh, well, no, she's not depressed because she gets up and goes to work. Well, no, honey. There are people who, I used to work 12-hour shifts with a migraine. Right. But I wasn't wearing it on my head to say, I've got a migraine, nor does anybody walk around saying I am depressed. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it gets masked. We put the lipstick on, we get the hair combed just right because we don't want people to recognize it in us. We recognize it in us sometimes, sometimes we don't. But we recognize it in ourselves, and then we want to hide it. It's not something that we want people to know about us. So we'll do all of these extra efforts. We'll put on a happy face. We'll go about the day. We'll take the kids to school. We'll come home and fix the dinner. But then when the deed is done, that's when we take off the mask, and then we can start sinking into a really, really dark pit. So it's very important for people to get an understanding of what depression looks like in their lives. What does it feel like? As Alicia was saying, it's a different feeling. Like, you just feel different. Sometimes you can pinpoint it, sometimes you can't. But the first step is really to recognize that something is not right. I just don't feel happy about things in life. Like, oh, the sun is shining, most people are happy, but if you still feel like you feel kind of like that flat affect, you just don't, that's that emoji, you don't know what you really feel like, it could be signs and symptoms of depression. Another tip or sign of depression that people don't really realize is sleeping. So if you're not getting enough sleep, or you're sleeping too much. So it has two ends of the spectrum. Either you can be sleeping way, way too much, or you're not getting enough sleep at all. So it can manifest itself like that. It can also manifest itself in the way in which we eat, whether you're not eating anything at all, or you're eating everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the person and which way their depression is exhibiting themselves. But the first foremost thing that you have to do is to be able to recognize it, to say, you know what, something is not right. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first step in it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, they're in denial. They don't mm-hmm. want, because depression is this taboo topic, mm-hmm. They don't want to be stereotyped. They're stigmatized by this word depression. So they try to avoid it. If I don't talk about it, it'll go away. If I don't say anything, mm-hmm. it'll go away. Sometimes it goes away. Sometimes, it's just something that's passing by, but sometimes it stays, it lingers. And it does more damage when you try to ignore it than when you address it. And I think it's really important, and I got this from you, Shaniqua, to just let it in, to let it, invite it in, get to know it, understand it for what it is, and then tell it it has to go.
Absolutely. And a lot give of it a timeline.
Fight it, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, too, people are afraid to be medicated. Mm-hmm. What will happen, I mean, the history of our people in the medical industry is one that's not always been a great one. And so people are afraid, if I go to that place, number one, will I be able to return back to my normal self? And then if they put me on medication, what kind of side effects are those going to have? Mm-hmm. So I think people have a real fear of being labeled that. They'll just say, oh, well, I'll just get over it. Or, you know, one day this will go away. Instead of, like you said, addressing the elephant in the room and saying, okay, these are my options. What can I do to better this situation so that I can be a better me on another day?
Right.
And sometimes you're going to need the help. And the stigma of, I don't want to take medication. I mean, my God, if you got a toothache, are you going to take something for your toothache? If you've got a headache, are you going to take something for your headache? So it's the same concept. Just because I start taking medication now does not mean I'm going to be on it for the rest of my life. And let me tell you, I'm a big girl. I will admit it. I've taken medication for depression before. And guess what? Did nobody know I had depression but me and my doctor? Nobody knows. It wasn't a clinical diagnosis. It was just some signs and symptoms that I was open and honest enough to finally come to grips with. Because when depression first hit me, I was about 17. Matter of fact, I was 17, and I was just graduating from high school, and I was entering my first year in college. So this was a big step for me. I was going to college. I was feeling myself. I'm getting a little more independent. I'm like, this is going to be fantastic. So I was at the top of my game, basically. And my mother fell sick. It was the day before my classes were going to start. So, you know, as a teenager, you want to try to get like all your sleep in. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yes, I'm going to get my last day of sleeping in late, because then I'm going to start my semester. I'm going to be ready to go. And so I got annoyed because I kept hearing this noise coming from my mother's room. And I'm like, man, I'm trying to get my sleep in, and this woman in there making this noise. So I get up and I'm like, my, like, what are you doing? And my mom, she had this like cot in her bed, and she was flopped over on the cot. Mm. But sometimes the cot would give way, like she would sit on it to get her clothes out of the drawer, and sometimes it would give in. So when I spoke to her, she kind of looked at me, but she kind of like, it was like a daze in her eyes. Mm-hmm. But me being self-centered, right? It's all about me and me getting my sleep. I'm more annoyed than really recognizing that there's a problem. So I'm like, Ma, get up. And I go back in the room, try to lay back down again. I hear the noise again. I go in there. I threaten her. I'm like, I'm going to call your sister, because I don't know what she's doing, if she's playing, if she's not playing. Right. And it comes to find out my mother was, something was going on with her. She had meningitis. Mm. So I whisked in. Like, when I realized there was a problem, I called 911. I called my brother, and I'm like, yo, you got to get over here. Something's wrong with Mom. We get ready to go to the hospital. Mind you, we get there. We get to the hospital. They tell me that they don't think my mother's going to live. Now, I'm 17 years old, I'm getting ready to start college, right? I'm getting ready to take the world by storm. And these doctors utter the words that my mother is not going to live. Now, I didn't know as much as I know now about God, but I did know that there was prayer, and that if you ask God for something, that he would give it to you if he saw fit. So I went in the bathroom floor in the hospital, nasty hospital. I think about it now. I'm like, are you kidding me? He was on the floor. But I did.
I was on the floor.
Yep. Out there looking like Rainbow Bright. I had all Mitch Mel. You know how you are. You got different colors, headscarf.
I don't even care right now. I'm on the floor.
Right, because I'm just trying to get some help for my mother. My mother was in the ICU for a couple of days. She was in the hospital for 14 days. My aunt did come and she kind of helped out, but I was basically taking on the weight of everything. When my mother was coming home from the hospital, I said, you know what? I got to make sure she's eating healthy. So I'm planning what I'm going to cook. Mind you, I wasn't at that cooking thing, but I was like, we're going to do it. We're going to step up. We're going to do it now. I was pulling a lot of the weight. And for a 17-year-old, I'm sure I did more than what I normally knew or would have done. And when I first got depressed, it was once my mother got better. Now, I did all of that superwoman, taking care of her, making sure she had doctors and she appointments and eating good and everybody was set and my dad had everything he needed, my brother, everybody was good. And it was once she got better, I remember it because one of my closest friends was having a baby shower and I did not go to my very closest friend's baby shower because I could not get up out of the bed. I was responsible for getting the cake. I got up, got the cake, and got right back in my bed.
Wow.
And I would not get up out of my bed. And I just apologized to her. I said, I just can't. So it was something from that superwoman syndrome, running around, doing everything, being the savior, being everything to everybody. And then once she started getting better, my body was like, shoot, we don't have to do that no more. And it was like, I just crashed.
I crashed.
So that was my very first experience with depression. Still didn't really know what it was. I didn't know what it was back then. Until it resurfaced itself again. Of course, I'm much older now. I've gone to nursing school, so I know things a little bit more in detail. So now I'm like, oh snap, I was depressed. And where my depression comes from is when I play superwoman. When I'm in my marriage and I'm trying to be everything and everybody to, you know, to everybody but myself, I literally lost who I was. And that is what triggered my depression. So it can happen in different people for different reasons. Now, you would think once your mother gets better, you would think that's time to rejoice. The wait is over. But for some reason in my body, it was like my body was like, okay, I'm going to force you to sit down now because you did way too much. And there were grown-ups that could have done it. My father was there. My father could have took on the responsibility. My aunt flew in from North Carolina. She could have taken on the responsibility. And that's what she was there to do. But it was just something innately in me that was like, no, I got to take care of this. This is my mom. I need her in my life. So I was working until I just literally burnt myself out. And once I got older, and then I realized that I had the conversation with my doctor. I was like, I don't think I'm all right. And she was like, well, what's going on? And I had just had a kid. So of course, you know, you start thinking postpartum depression, but my kid was 2 years old. I looked at her. I was like, my kid is two. You can still be depressed because now a 2 year old is starting to do more for themselves. They're not doing a whole lot, but they're doing a lot more. It's not in that baby stage where you have to nurture. Now they're kind of coming in their own. They got their own little attitudes and own little opinions, talking about no, all that cute stuff. But now that's when I started to feel it. And I was open and honest enough to have the conversation with my doctor. And my doctor was like, yeah, it's possible that you're depressed. She was like, it is possible. And when they suggested starting me on medication, I was up for it. Cause I'm like, I ain't got time to be depressed. I'm in my career. I'm you know, I'm married. I've got kids. Like I didn't have time for depression. So
Did you talk to your husband about it? I'm curious.
Nope. He didn't understand. When I tried to tell him about it, he didn't understand. All he saw was I wasn't doing. I come home from work and the kid running around, the house is a mess, the food's not cooked. That's what he saw. He saw that I wasn't functioning or performing as a wife in his image. What I saw was I was depressed.
You just couldn't.
And yeah. I can't be something for you that I'm not even for myself. Like, I didn't care about eating. Oh, yeah, I'd get up and fix a bottle. Yeah, I'd do that. I'd open up the jar of baby food because I made sure my kid ate. But a grown-up, I was just like, you on your own. And then it annoyed me that he was putting that expectation on me. And I'm like, I don't want this. I don't want this expectation. I started not wanting a title. Right. I'm like, you could take this title wife back, because if this is what it's going to feel like, no, you can hold that. I don't want it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes you can't open up to certain people. I didn't even open up to my mother. I didn't tell my mother. I didn't tell any of my friends that I was depressed. I just suffered through it. Mm-hmm. Now, was that a smart thing? Absolutely not. So I should have reached out for help.
So your reasoning for not telling them was because of the stigma you felt that they would judge, or that you thought they wouldn't understand, like your husband didn't understand?
I thought that they would not understand. Nobody would understand, because let me tell you, Natira, when people looked at my life, they thought I had it all together. I was a registered nurse. I had graduated. Like, I'm living that life. We had the two
picture
cars.
Perfect. You know, the picture perfect life. Yeah.
The only thing was
picture perfect.
The dog and the white picket fence. But we had everything else. So for people looking on the outside, they would say, well, what on earth do you have to be depressed about? That ain't what depression is.
I think that's what the problem is.
No.
That people are looking for something that looks like something else, but that's not really what it is.
You could be the richest person living in a mansion with the butlers and the maids and the chauffeurs, and still have depression. Yeah. Depression doesn't discriminate.
Right.
It don't care how old you are. It doesn't care what your status in society is. It don't care what your race is. It will get you. It will get you. And sometimes, you know, in my situation, there was instances in my life where I allowed depression to come in. Like recently, I lost, and I understand where you were coming from, Alicia, when you were saying when you lost your father, because grief can bring depression on.
Right.
I recently lost my niece. She was 24 years old, and she was shot and killed. And once again, superwoman. I had my cake. I was taking care of everybody in the hospital, making sure everybody was taken care of, did funeral arrangements. I mean, your girl was out there doing it all. I was saving the world, because you know what? Working was more comfortable for me. If I sat and rested, then I was going to feel. And it was like, no time to feel. Mm-mm. We need to work. So I went through whisking around, doing everything. And then after the burial, after the phone stopped ringing, all the check-ins stopped.
Right.
Nobody's calling on me. Nobody's checking on me. That's when depression tapped me on the shoulder and says, hi. And you know what I said?
Bye, Felicia.
Nope. I said, hey, come on in.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I welcomed depression in my life because I was tired of doing and being, and I was tired. Okay. And I'm like, now it gives me an opportunity to lay my behind down. But I'm smarter now. I'm wiser now. I told depression, you're going to come in this door, but you ain't staying forever. You are not staying forever. So I allowed depression to come in, and I was allowed to feel. Mm-hmm. And it helped me to feel again where it is I had been numb for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it now woke me up and say, you hurt, you're sad, you're in pain. Like, it was my opportunity to feel. But then after I had that release, God was like, okay, enough. Now we got stuff to do. Because in addition to that, I was building a brand new business. I had clients who I had their projects waiting on me. I was still working through being at the hospital and answering doctors' questions and planning funerals. Like, I was still doing all that I do. And depression was a way to slow me down. But then I got back up.
So do you feel that owning it and accepting it is a liberating experience to get you past that moment?
Absolutely.
Or should avoidance be the...
No. I don't ignore it.
Yeah.
I don't ignore it. Now, I don't label myself. I don't say, oh, I have depression. No. Because that thing's a seasonal thing. It comes and it goes. It can go for years. It can come back. But it's always triggered by something.
Something, right.
When I get that, when that cape is on too tight, that's when it comes. And that's why women need to stop trying to be superwoman. This is what I was telling you, Lizette. I was like, listen, you got to switch your names around sometimes. Stop being superwoman and start being woman super.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you got to allow yourself to be a woman. I am a woman with flaws. I don't do everything right. I don't say everything right. You know, sometimes I might hurt somebody's feelings. Sometimes I might make somebody feel good. This is me.
Yep.
This is who I am. And sometimes I'm not all happy. I'm the motivational speaker. Oh, you're always happy. No, I'm not. That's a lie. I'm not always happy. There's some things that piss me off. There's some things that I'm, you know, that I'm sad about. You know, like, I'm human. I have feelings. And once I learned to start acknowledging my feelings, that was the liberation right there.
And that's what's so important. People underestimate how important it is to validate what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to feel these things. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be mad. I think a lot of people's problems come in when they start thinking about what other people are going to think about them.
Yep.
That's the key to a whole bunch of problems. Is that
once you forget about what other people might think of you, because you don't know what other people are going through. They're probably going through the same stuff. But looking at you takes their mind off of their mess.
Mm-hmm.
You got to worry about yourself. And it's okay to feel these things. It's okay to acknowledge what's going on, but then you have to want to be better. You got to want to get better. So you have to focus on doing what you need to do to get better. Not what you think needs to be done so you can look better in other people's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's so where Shaniqua, a lot of problems come in.
Absolutely.
I have a question.
Yes, yeah.
So now that you are older and wiser, do you recognize your triggers?
Oh, yes. I see it coming. That's why I recognized it when it tapped on my door. I was like, I saw it coming around the corner. It wasn't surprising me. I saw it.
So what are the things that you learned is triggers that for you now in this journey? What are some of the things? Is it stress? Is it when I'm doing too much? Okay.
When I'm taking on the weight of the world. So if you have a problem, and of course, this is my profession. I'm a nurse. I'm a health coach. I'm a life coach. So it's my job to take on people's problems. And so I thought.
Right.
That's what I learned in nursing school, right? Like, you're taking on someone else's burdens, and then you're coming up with this treatment plan, and you're trying to feed it back to them to say, you have diabetes. Okay, let me take that from you. Let me try to heal you. Let me try to make you better. And some, you can't do that. I do not have the God-given powers to make people better, but I do have that spirit in me where I can encourage people to want to do better for themselves. So what I've learned is I have to let other people own their mess, just like I own my stuff. You got to own your stuff, and we both own in our own stuff, and then I can help walk you through. I'll hold your hand if you need me to, but I can't carry your burdens. And when I start carrying the burdens, the weight, the pain, the grief, the anger, when I start carrying all of that from other people, that's when my depression starts to want to come in.
I
have these expectations put on me. I don't put these expectations on myself anymore. I used to, because I used to want to be perfect. In my first book, I Didn't Know My Own Strength, How My Faith Moved My Mountains, I wrote this chapter about you wanting to be perfect, the pressure of being perfect. I'm not perfect. I was not created to be perfect. I don't have the ability to be perfect. So you thinking that I'm perfect that puts too much weight on me, those expectations. And that's what eats me away, because now I feel like I have to perform. Now I feel like I've got to do things to meet your satisfaction, because I'm one of those people. I don't like to have people angry with me. I'm a people pleaser. But then I've learned, stop that mess.
Yeah. Do you think that women do that more than men?
I believe it is. It's innate. Not all women.
No.
But innately, it's something that's in our beings. Mm-hmm. Comes from, in my opinion, it comes from our ability to give life. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, being that we have the ability, whether we've taken the, you know, we've done it or not, we just are innately made, like our hormones are set up that way to be able to trigger, like to nurture, take care of. So we get that innately. And that sometimes can be a downfall when we think
it's
that
we're
supposed
that
to
save. It's
funny that
you say that, because I think some of it sometimes is learned behavior.
Yeah.
My mother was the type of woman who always put boundaries and limits. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, I didn't understand. I'm like, why is she always saying no? She just was that woman. I cannot stretch myself further than I can.
And she was in self.
And as I got older, I became that person too.
Good.
But for me, I know my triggers. I don't do well with grief. Mm-hmm. That is something that will take me to a place I don't want to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I will try to avoid it the best that I can, because I feel if I go to that place, I may not come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very scary feeling for me.
Yeah. And you know, that avoidance, I don't like anything to have control over me.
Right.
So now that grief has control over you. But what I've tried to learn to say is, I'm going to feel this. When I was going through my divorce, one of the things that I used to cry, I'm like, I want to feel this. I want to cry. I want to be angry. I want to be sad. I want to be, you know, whatever. I want to feel it, because once I feel it, now I can heal from it. Right. But if I avoid it, I'm dodging it. Then now I'm jumping into the next relationship, trying to feel, or, you know, to fill that void. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that to me, because avoidance is self-destructive.
Right.
Because at any given moment, if grief jumps out the corner and side attacks, you're like, and then it's gonna cause you to crumble.
I'll be dodging that thing like,
Listen,
can't
catch
me. I don't like that.
But sometimes you have to just go head on. Like, have you ever had those dreams where somebody's chasing you?
Yeah.
Those dreams scare the daylights out of you. I don't like chased in a dream. So it's like, yo, if we could just stop and turn around and face that thing and start running after it. It's like, what? Wait a minute, something's wrong with this picture.
Right.
So that's what I've learned to do with depression. Yo, you're not chasing me down. I'm chasing you down.
Yeah.
And I'm coming at you. And then we're going to have this tussle. I'm going to feel what I feel. You're going to feel what I'm giving you. And then I'm going to get better from it. Mm-hmm. So I can't do that avoidance thing, because it'll jump attack me. And I don't like that. I don't like that. So we got to, if I see it coming, I see the triggers and I'm like, it's coming.
Yep.
Mm-hmm,
and
it's coming.
I can't stress enough how important it is to allow yourself to feel. Mm-hmm. And for me, I allow myself to feel. I still avoid. I'm still in that fight or flight, and I'm fighting, but I'm fighting the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So I allow myself to feel, but then I don't do anything about it. I'm like, all right, I feel it. I know you're there, and I don't do anything about it. I go about life as usual. But what I'm doing essentially is carrying what I'm feeling on to my next move, and that's not healthy.
And so I address it. I address it, and then I have an action plan, because we're coaches, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to have an action plan. Mm-hmm. So when it was coming in, I was ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready for it, because I know the things to do,
right.
And then I learn more things to do. So I'm like, yeah, this is what we're going to do. And this last time that I allowed depression to come in, I actually did take medication, but it wasn't a prescribed medication. It was an over-the-counter, it's like the homeopathic, it's a natural herbal supplement that I took. Because I'll like be St. honest John's with you. Wort. Yes, ma'am.
Girl,
yes,
let ma'am. Me let me tell you how we went out to dinner the other night, and she pulled the little pharmacy out. She had she had the sweet essential oil, the sweet orange oil, and
the vitamin B12.
The vitamin B12. I said, Lord, look at how she's prepared for it all.
I carry it with me because there are natural things that we can do to enhance our mood. The orange essential oil, what I do is I put a couple of drops in my hands. I run my hands together, and then I just let the aroma hit me.
I did it.
And that's, I'm telling you, it perks you up.
It helped. It for me, because I'm always tired, and I think a lot of it comes from the surgery that I had. I'm always tired. Yeah. So I was talking to her about it, and I did, got actually left it upstairs because I was going to show you. I was like, I got good. My bottle.
Yes.
And it helps. It wakes you up. It makes you feel energized. It's refreshing.
So I did the orange oil, the essential orange oil. I did that in the morning. So I would do that throughout the day several times because it's natural. You just do this throughout the day. People would see me. They'd be like, what you doing? I'm like, mind your business. I'm getting my life together. Right? Because I'm fanning that goodness into me. So I did orange in the daytime and I did lavender at night. Because I'll be honest with you, during my grief stage, when I was going through my depression, I was taking Benadryl every single night for about a month. And I'm a registered nurse, you guys. I knew that was wrong. I knew that was wrong, but I could not do that tossing and turning at night. As soon as my head hit the pillow, I needed to go to sleep because that's when I would start thinking. That's when the sadness, the tears, everything would come to me. Right. So I said, no, we're not doing this. And then I realized that that was a problem. And I'm like, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. So what I had to learn to do was to find other alternatives. So what I did was the orange in the morning, I did lavender at night. So I would sprinkle my bed sheets with lavender oil. And I would drink, I'm drinking my chamomile tea now. So I would drink natural things that would ease me to sleep. I ended up getting melatonin, which is more of a natural substance. So if I did need assistance getting to sleep, I would take a melatonin and it would help me get my sleep without doping myself up with all of that, you know, that substance from the Benadryl. Right. So I knew the error in my way, but I also knew enough to correct it, but I had to be willing to correct it. Because sometimes people know what's going to make them feel better, but you won't. Because you're just content with being in that mess and stewing around in it. And enough is enough. Another one of my chapters in my first book was, ain't no party like a pity party. Right? Ain't no party like a pity party. So I tell you, I'm like, I let it in. Like, I was getting the banners. I was getting the utensils, the balloons. I was getting that pity party ready, honey. Yes, we were gonna have a good time in this pity party. But how long can a pity party last?
Exactly.
You can't stay in that realm forever. Like, we have to know that there is a calling on our lives. There is something that we are required to do, and not just for the people who we see. Mm-hmm. People needed me to get up out of my bed. And the funniest thing was I was still showing up. I do my Sisterly Sundays with Shaniqua Facebook Live every Sunday. And I was still showing up. And the other day I was watching a video that I did. And I was watching that video. I was like, yo, you were depressed while you were recording that video. But I would get this energy in me and I would put these powerful words out and I would just put it out in the airway, and when I watched it back, the thing blessed the daylights out of me.
Because so words sometimes have power.
They absolutely do.
So the negative, you have to be very careful. I tell my daughter that when she I said, mommy can't take it when you say negative things about yourself. I don't like, don't do that. around me because mommy loves you and I can't.
Right. So sometimes your push to get up out of the bed in the mornings is not for your children. It's not for your coworkers. Sometimes your push is for you. When you spew that positivity out to somebody else, that thing retracts right back to you. So when you speak positivity is going to come back to you. So those words that I put out in the atmosphere thinking that I'm helping somebody else out turn right back around like a boomerang effect, and that thing helped me.
Right.
Yes.
So me pushing myself to the limits to get up and to motivate others in turn helped to work me out of my depression.
Right. And
so you have to be able to recognize what's going on and be just a little willing to give yourself an opportunity to get out of it just as easy as you got into it. Keep the door open. You can come, but we're gonna leave this door open. I don't trust you like that, depression.
And sometimes that's the reason why you're going, so to help the next person along.
Absolutely.
And you can do that. All the positivity, you can be as positive as you want. I don't want, for whoever listens, I don't want you to think, well, I'm just gonna get up and I'm gonna be positive today. Yes, I want you to get up and I want you to be positive. But with all the positivity that you do in your day, in your hours, you still have to address the problem. You just get up and say, I'm going to be positive today. I'm going to compliment this person. I'm going to do this for this person. And still forget about what's going on internally with you. It doesn't work that way.
Because all it takes
was that easy, then we wouldn't have this problem. Absolutely. It really was that easy to just think yourself better.
Absolutely.
It would just
to address that problem. You need a good support system.
Absolutely.
I think everybody needs to really look at who's in their circle. What kind of tribe are you rolling with? If you don't feel
that's another topic of a discussion that I think you need to have.
Sure is,
because how to change your tribe.
You can drop them like flies, and you just got to get over that.
That's the easiest thing. We got to
look. There's the bye, Felicia. Now that's when the bye, Felicia.
And you dropping your tribe, because a lot of times your tribe is your family.
Yeah,
that's a whole nother thing.
I'm gonna see y'all at the cookout, but right now,
we've
done that, but most people have issue, you know, changing that tribe. So we need to do another topic. That's a good
absolutely, and it's important. People think that they have to stay committed to friends that they had back in the day. Just because we were friends back in the day, we served a purpose for each other then. I have now grown. You have now grown. That doesn't mean that we grew together. We could have grown. You know, we met. We came to that fork in the road. You went that way.
Right.
That way. But there's no reason for us to still be committed to a friendship that's not working for each one of us. And it's even less commitment if it's only working for one person. So you need to really stop feeling guilty about needing to throw up the deuces, chuck the deuces.
But guilt is something that we do as women. Like we will guilt ourselves.
We do.
We look back, we critique, we are we're our biggest critic.
We do.
We are our own biggest critic.
But we want to stop that.
We surely do.
I want us to stop that.
Because I don't need to be perfect, and I'm all right with that. I don't need to. I'm not striving for perfection in this world. What I'm striving to do is to live my life on purpose.
Right.
So you can keep your perfection. I'm living on purpose.
Yep. So have you found your purpose?
Yes, a little bit
on that. I know it's a whole book and a series and all of that.
Yes.
Enlighten us just a little bit.
So I am a motivator. That's what I was called to do. My spiritual mother, she's also my biological aunt. She's a minister, and when we had reconnected after many, many years, she asked me, she was like, do you know what you're called to do? And I'm like, no, I'm thinking she's going to tell me. You're not even going to tell me, like, you know, but you're not going to tell me, but you're going to ask me if I know. So basically it was like this test. Like, she basically wanted to see if I could figure it out, if I could get fine tuned, and if I can get turn my ear to God and let God tell me who it was that I was. And I am an encourager by nature, hence why I am a registered nurse. Hence why I was such a good registered nurse, because I have that ability. I'm a people person. I will talk to you. I can encourage you when you're having a bad day. Like, you'll never know that I'm having a bad day, but you will release your bad day to me. I have people walk up to me in the streets, they tell me their problems, and I'm like, do I have a sign on my head that says, drop your stuff here?
I understand so, that. People tell you stuff that you be like, I'm shocked that they told me.
And I know stuff about other people that even their closest friends don't know about, because mm-hmm. it's just something that's in me. It's part of my what my calling is. So no, I don't take on their burdens anymore. See, I had to learn how to do that. Like, your encourager doesn't mean that I'm going to take on your problems. Mm-hmm. So if you say, oh, I don't have no money, boo-hoo-hoo, and then I go digging in my pocket, give you all my money, now I'm broke, and you happy, and you go on with life, and I'm like, well, now I'm broke.
That didn't
fix the problem. That right. just shifted. There was a transference.
Yes.
So that goes also back to who you hang around with. Yes. You can't be around them negative Nellies. The sun is shining, it's all beautiful. Oh my goodness, it's allergy season. And sit yourself down. Like, we can't be around those people, because when we're trying to stay pumped, they've got a little pin and they're jabbing at us, and they're gonna sap our energy really, really quickly. So we've got to make sure we understand that. And I think me walking in my purpose, knowing that I'm called to motivate people, knowing that I'm called to encourage people, and I've learned to do that in different facets of my life. Like, I'm a registered nurse. Healthcare is me. Why am I a publishing executive? Like, why would I start a publishing company? Like, why didn't I start like a nursing agency or a home care agency or something like that?
That was the nursing is the means to get you closer to your purpose.
And it's the training, how to put yourself in it. It's like the army. It's military training that I went through. So being compassionate to people's situations, being empathetic, not sympathetic, because I'm not sorry you're going through that, because you ate the donuts, you ate the chocolate chip cookies, you ate all of that. I didn't eat it. I didn't make you eat it. You ate it. So I'm not sympathetic to you. I'm empathetic that I can understand your situation without being in it. So if you have an issue in life, you went through whatever you went through. I may not have gone through it, but I'm empathetic to your situation. And then I can try to help guide you in the right direction to get you to a better path so you can see your way. Right. So that is one of my gifts. And I think understanding that now helps me to feel better about myself. Because I know what I need to do. So I have to produce my books. I have to get on those speaking platforms, because I've got a message and I've got to help people. And I've found these amazing ways that I can help people without actually being in front of them. Like, I'm not in the room with any of you guys, right? Yeah. But we can still get the message out. This podcast can be heard in Australia, Japan, you know, West Africa. Like, it can go places that I can't physically run to. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty of understanding what your gifting is, and then God will allow you to do it in the most creative ways. So I've been very, very blessed to find out and understand what my purpose is. So that becomes my focus. So even on days when I'm not feeling good, even when I welcome depression into my life, it was like, okay, you're staying for a short period of time, because I still have people that I'm charged over. Mm-hmm. I've got to make sure that those people get what they need during my lifetime. And we don't have time to die in this mess, because there's still work to be done. So that keeps me going. That keeps me motivated. And I know the more I encourage and motivate other people, it's coming right back to me. Because my words have the power to help other people. But them things help me first.
Absolutely.
So I love listening to, when I do podcasts, I listen to it back. When I do my lives, I listen to it back. When I do my speaking engagements, I listen to it back. Funny thing is, I don't like the sound of my voice.
I don't like the sound of my voice either.
I don't think anybody does. I never like the
sound of my voice, but my words,
matters. Yeah.
When I'm on fire, woo! I don't even recognize myself. I'm like, that don't even sound like me. I'm like, like, go, girl, go.
So and wait a minute. It
just amazes me.
You have to tell everybody how they can find you.
Okay. Well, I'm on social media. I'm all up and down social media. So I'm on Facebook, Shaniqua Johnson, RN. I'm on Instagram. That's my favorite platform. Shaniqua Johnson, RN. My website is ShaniquaJohnsonRN.com. If you're interested in telling your story, you know you've been through some stuff. You know you got passion about something and you want to tell your story. Well, then you need to come on through to Stronger Through Faith Publishing. Because we are helping people birth their projects. We are helping writers become published authors. So you can do StrongerThroughFaith.com. You can find me on Instagram and on Facebook on Stronger Through Faith Publishing. So everybody has a story to tell. Everybody.
Yes.
So that's how they can find me.
And get their motivation, because she is.
I'm telling you.
She's a pill. She is a pill you want to swallow. I will say that up front. She really is. I appreciate Shaniqua for everything. From her little talks, she got them little, you know, when you were a kid and you do something you weren't supposed to and your mama smack your hand.
Mm-hmm.
She got it.
I do it in love.
She does it in love. And she'll slide it in. And I'm like, oh, gosh, right. She's right. But she's amazing. I'm going to put your information in links.
Absolutely.
And attach it so people can find you. And I am so grateful to you for coming on. Does anybody have any final words?
I would like to say thank you. Can I just say thank you to you ladies for having me on? It was a pleasure. And I looked forward. This was great. The conversation.
I want to have you back on. I want to have a discussion about grief. You and Alicia both had some very and Natira. I'm not sure. I think your dad passed away too, Natira.
My dad passed away, and my first child died.
Okay, so you guys have experienced some real grief, and I would like to have you on again just to talk about how you cope with that grief. How do you feel? We talked about depression today, and you know, depression is a symptom, a sign of dealing with grief. So I just wanted to talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely.
Alicia, I hope you, because Alicia was really recent. I hope you are doing okay.
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad.
Good to hear. I do want to say one thing to Shaniqua, because I would be amiss if I didn't. Mm-hmm. You said in the progress that you are not a healer, but you are.
Oh, I am. Yeah. Not in that way. Not in that way.
You are.
But
you
I got you. Healer. Thank you. I appreciate you.
You are a healer.
She is.
I appreciate you.
Yes.
She's talking about in a spiritual sense.
I understand what you're talking about. Okay. I got my ears tuned up. I hear you.
Okay, good. She's my healer. I said, what she means? She's not a healer. She is.
I meant it in the other way. Like
I know.
Well, definitely check her out every Sunday at 7:30. She's doing her Facebook Live. Sisterly Sundays with Shaniqua every single Sunday.
AM or PM?
PM, girl. I don't get up that early. Mm-hmm. I do get up that early, but I don't be ready.
I know. I'm just saying, is this before church or after?
After church. After church. Yes. I let the pastors do their thing.
Okay. I'm about to say 7:30 a.m. I might not.